the midweek drive, zooming into the future and energized by the now.
Do you know, when I was a younger individual doing all those GCSEs and A-levels, etc., I never could really quite enjoy the bank holidays because there was always that sense that, yeah, it's all well and good actually trying to have a holiday, etc., but then suddenly you're in the exam season and so on. Well, it hasn't got any easier as we head into the 21st century, of course, with 93% of parents saying that their child experiences stress or anxiety related to exams, and 91% also have the same stress themselves. Maths is the subject which causes the most anxiety, followed by English and science. So how do we actually cope with this and ensure that people genuinely can live up to their potential and actually not be crippled by the stress of anxiety and so on? Well, one possible line might be through our next guest, who is the head of senior school at Inspired Online Schools. That's the wonderful Katrina Olson. How are you, Katrina?
I'm well, thank you, Alex. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's great to connect with your good self, but as I said, there is part of one which says this is and has been for the last two centuries really a kind of almost a rite of passage, really. But you know, the very fact that we've had exams of one shape or another for nigh on 200 years, is that really suggesting that, well, we need to actually rethink the way in which we assess our students, the way in which they actually cope with exam stress and so on?
Yeah, I think it does need a fresh look. You know, we're not getting away from exams anytime soon unless there's a big U-turn in the way that we assess students. And so we have to prepare them for those assessments. And I think we need to, especially in this day and age, prepare them emotionally as well. And not just at home, but at school as well. And we have to, you know, prepare students for those feelings of the exams. And we need to make sure that they're ready the morning of the exam and they can cope with that stress. They know that it's a normal feeling to feel stressed. Yeah. And they just need those coping mechanisms to deal with that stress.
I will recall my A-level chemistry tutor saying, well, exams are basically like being in an aircraft when effectively the pilot has a heart attack and you're called upon to get into the cockpit and actually cope with the actual result. I'm not sure whether that was a good or a bad sort of thing to say to a young 17, 18-year-old at the time. But why do exams cause so much stress and anxiety for students? Is it that sense of the unknown, the fact that one always has anxiety about things that might crop up that we're not prepared for and so on?
It's exactly the unknown, yes. I just taught my year 11s yesterday. They're writing computer science exam today. And for them, it's definitely the unknown. It's what questions are going to come up in this exam that I don't know. And you know what I said to them? You must breathe through it. Know that you know it. Go into your long-term memory, all that preparation over the last 2 years. And the main thing would be not to panic. So I think you've hit it on the head. It is the unknown of the exams and what's going to come up.
Now, clearly, we are very conscious of mental well-being, mental health and so on. And there is that balance between a little bit of stress can be quite good for one. It can help our performance. It can help our way forward. But too much stress, obviously, and the organic life form called the human will actually just suffer a complete breakdown. How extreme are the exam stresses, particularly now we're in the post-COVID era? Because clearly the 2 years of COVID, et cetera, probably had their own stresses and strains.
Yeah, and I think we have to distinguish between those students who have mental health issues. They do need additional support throughout the exams, you know, get access arrangements. Maybe they need extra time or some more support through those exams. And then, as you said, the students with those kind of normal stresses of exams, you know, we have seen a peak in anxiety, especially in students of GCSE and AS and A level age. And we do need to support them. We need to help them through that to get to the exams.
Yeah, especially when you acknowledge that the exam season actually is falling during Mental Health Awareness Week. It's almost as though there's a vexatious paradox right there as well, which, again, from an English person's point of view, saying vexatious paradox could be quite a challenge for an exam subject. Let's talk a little bit about your own background, because you've had a vast teaching experience. You began at Edinburgh, moved to London, you're assistant principal of London Academy. You moved to South Africa, of course, deputy head of academics and college head of Redham House in Durbanville. Clearly, from that point of view, lots of experiences. Are the challenges that students face becoming more problematic, or are they actually, you know, as you said, the classic line of just remember to breathe, are they kind of effectively being addressed?
Yeah, thanks for running through my career history there. Quite an international one. And one thing I say to students as well is that, you know, they all face the same challenges no matter where they are in the world. They all have those same feelings. But I do feel that since I started my career way back in the mid noughties, that it you know, the stress, the anxiety, the mental health issues of teenagers has increased just from my view. We are dealing with students who are exposed to a lot more on social media and on their devices. And we need to treat them differently than when I did to students 15, 16 years ago.
And Katrina, is there anything else that we can do to start addressing that issue and supporting students in terms of your work with the Inspired group? Are there things which can come into place, such as maybe practicing mindfulness?
Yeah, exactly. So we really need to prepare students, you know, for those assessments. So we actually have a whole program starts in year seven where we have learning to learn. So we teach students how they learn and how to deal with and their anxiety and study skills. And we build that up into year 10, where we do a mastering learning course. We actually go through with students what happens in your brain when you are stressed, what happens in your brain when you are anxious, and build up that assessment skills, not just academically, as I said, but emotionally, so that when you do get to the end of year 11 and your exam is on Monday, that you're actually able to regulate your emotions. You know that it's normal. You're able to sit down. You're able to breathe, as you said, and you can cope with those feelings. We're not saying they're going to go away. As you said earlier, it's natural and good to have a little bit of stress. I'd be worried if you weren't a little bit stressed, but it's that they're able to cope with those feelings, so that they don't go into the exam and totally blank. They're able to go in and breathe through it and get into that long-term memory for their learning and be able to put that down on paper.
Yes, I always used to recall during the actual exam itself being somewhat stressed by the inevitable students who would be putting their hand up very frequently and seem to be writing entire versions of War and Peace whilst I was sort of still working through the first letter routine. And in a sense, you have to focus on your own performance, really, as opposed to worry about the environment, perhaps.
That's it. And a peer pressure is a big thing with assessments, not just your official exams at the end, but your, you know, your in-school assessments, you know, the sitting in the traditional classroom at the end of a paper and everyone saying how they got on and what they did. That can cause a lot of anxiety amongst young people. And I think it's one thing that we don't have in our school, being an online school. And it's one thing that our parents and our students value, is that they don't have that peer pressure. They can concentrate on their own performance. They can reflect themselves. They can go into their lessons, their teacher, and ask them, but they don't have that kind of corridor chat afterwards.
Yeah, absolutely. You already brought on slight cold sweats with respect to that when I think back to my own sort of scenario. But anyway, where can people find out further details, Katrina, about the work you're doing with Inspired Online Schools?
Oh, thank you. Yes, it's kingsinterhigh.co.uk.
Katrina Olsen, head of senior school at Inspired Online. I suppose really the reverse of the situation might be an Ofsted inspection, really. That's another sort of high stress value, which perhaps affects the tutors more than the students. But again, lots of challenges there. Maybe Kings Inter High can actually look at that as well, perhaps. But that's another challenge for another day.
Exactly. Thanks so much, Alex.
Now, when you are the first British woman to claim Olympic gold medals at consecutive Olympic Games, Sydney 2000 and Athens 2004, clearly you've earned the right to immortality. But it gets even better, because when you then become a godmother to Ambition, the second cruise liner to be launched by Ambassador Cruise Line, well, it's even more wonderful. And no doubt we're delighted to actually welcome that award-winning, that double Olympic champion, of course, to the programme today, Shirley Robertson. How are you, Shirley?
Well, I'm a little tired. It was a huge celebration on the ship last night, but what a fabulous day and what a great honour. I suppose I didn't really appreciate what it involved until I was here smashing the champagne and giving good wishes to everyone that sails on board. Yeah, it's a fabulous honour and a lovely family, the Ambassador family.
Fantastic. Well, I mean, obviously, we appreciate that you merit this, certainly from that point of view. But we are also pleased to actually welcome the Ambassador Cruise Line Chief Executive Officer to the program. That's Christian Verhoenig. How are you, Christian?
Good morning. Well, I can only copy what was said already. We had an amazing night yesterday. We had sunshine in Newcastle. So a fitting program for bringing our premium value cruise offering for the adult only now also to 7 regional ports. Obviously, it's a big achievement for Ambassador Cruise Line. We're very proud to be here and sailing on her maiden voyage today.
And presumably delighted when Shirley accepted the invitation to become godmother for this particular launch.
Well, absolutely. You know, in any business, you need dedicated people which are with passion there. And this very often is only found in extreme sports. So we found this to be a perfect match, being a role model as well. Obviously, obviously sailing background. Yeah, no, it was a great honor to have her. And I think she blessed the ship extremely well. And we will have many happy guests sailing on air and showing the warmest welcome ambassadors we're known for.
Now, Shirley, you're clearly, as I say, a genius when it comes to sailing and such like. But just talk us through this tradition of actually having a godmother for every cruise ship to bring good luck and protection to the vessel. I mean, was it something when you were winning that second Olympic gold, you said, right, that's it. Our next routine is become a godmother within the next 2 decades.
Well, certainly, you know, winning Olympic gold medals does open some unusual doors. And this is right up there. It's been a really special thing to do. But you know, being a godmother to any vessel is it's important, and it's a real honor. Obviously, seafarers are superstitious, and you need a little bit of luck, and you want to just protect that good luck and that karma. So it's a good role. But I think also in a way, represent the hundreds of people who were involved in the refit, the 500 staff who kind of bring this ship alive. And then obviously the thousands of people from all around the United Kingdom who will come and have, you know, an amazing holiday afloat. And that's pretty special. And Alex, you know, I love being at sea, and I really appreciate being at sea, you know, smelling the sea, the different weather in the day, the sunrise, the sunset, and you only really get that when you're afloat. So it's a pretty special holiday.
Christian, as CEO of Ambassador Cruise Line, I mean, Ambition's launch, it's created jobs, it's created a whole range of aspects. There's a whole infrastructure. It's not just a case of, right, well, we've got a boat, we've got to get people to sail in it, and that's it.
No, that's absolutely right. And, you know, to go a step back, basically, we established 2 years ago Ambassador Cruise Line. Since then, we hired 70 staff ashore. We hired over 1,000 crew and officers on board the ship. And obviously, as part of our sustainability goals and plans, we are working very closely with the local economy, which creates jobs in the ports which we are visiting. We are taking many local supplies from the ports we are sailing from now, you know, in addition to Tilbury, 7 more additional ones. So it's a boost for the economy. As well for those places which we're visiting. To give you an idea, we're operating this year 60 different itineraries from 2 to 120 nights, visiting basically places worldwide. So wherever you come with your ship and with your guests, obviously you are boosting the local economy, which especially in those times is seen as very helpful, and therefore we have great support from the community.
Shirley, we know that you're a tremendous competitor and sporting success from that part of you, but how taken were you with cruising? I mean, you said you like the sea, etc. I mean, because there are some people who actually say, yeah, it's not the same unless we're actually hoisting our own mainsail, shall we say. And I mean, this presumably is the A-plus double gold winning ambassador class scenario that we've got here.
Well, you know, I drive sailing boats as well. You know, I like to steer. So I'm very much hoping when we head off on our maiden voyage this evening that I get a go. That I have a little go at driving. I mean, I'm obviously fascinated by boats and naval architecture, whatever the size. So I've been on the ship now for, you know, 48 hours, really exploring, you know, not just the sort of the wonderful spa and the theatre and the great restaurants, but actually how the ship works, how it all comes together. And as Christian said, you know, 500 people work on this ship from all around the world, and they bring the whole thing alive. They bring the holiday alive for the guests, and that's been pretty special to see that happening. But I'm really looking forward to this evening and leaving Newcastle and heading off to Dundee, which was actually my home of birth. I'm obviously Scottish, and yeah, I can't wait to tomorrow morning to be sailing in to Dundee and have a great Scottish welcome there.
Fantastic. Of course, we've got Edinburgh, Leith, Falmouth, Liverpool, Bristol, Belfast, all actually there. People are listening in the wilds of Lincoln and they say, yeah, okay, where's our closest one? We'll work on that system. Christian, returning to yourself, a really important point this. I was very impressed to see that this cruise ship is in the top 15% of environmentally sustainable ships, because that was obviously critical given the green world in which we live.
Well, it's not the green world in which we live. I don't like this kind of expression, to be very honest. You know, sustainability is an obligation today for any business. We are sailing the oceans, so we have to look after those ones. And as such, as a business, we have decided, despite regulations only coming in place over the coming years, to immediately become one of the cleanest ships in the world. And we upgraded the ship over the last 6 weeks by outfitting emission reduction systems, by installing new advanced wastewater treatment plants, ballast water treatment plants. We are actually biodigesting all our food waste in order to become hot air and water. And this not only allows us to, you know, look positive and with least impact into the future, but it also allows us to sail to protected and environmentally protected places such as the World Heritage Fjords, where strict regulations are coming into force already now.
And of course, presumably the naming of the ship Ambition. To me, I actually thought, oh, is that like Enterprise? Although that was probably already taken by another series and another sort of battle, etc. Was that part of the strategy of actually saying this is the ambition that you have to obviously be the best cruise line deliverer in the world?
Well, it's basically to provide this warm welcome what we offer, to give guests excellent cuisine, to give them best and shows on board in order to enable them to have a fantastic time. But it's also ambition for what we as a business want to do, which is to be leading in this niche of premium value, but also to grow the business in the future. And we see massive demand now also from the regional ports and departures. So it also basically tells the story what we are planning in the future, which is to grow further and add more ships into the fleet to serve more ports and serve more guests.
And I have to ask the question, we've already heard from Shirley about wanting to drive the ship. Is that going to be something you say, yeah, okay, we know that it's not necessarily part of the Extreme 40 sailing series, but, you know, she can actually take the helm?
I think today we will start for her to observe it very closely, and we will then have a separate discussion for the future going forward with this one. We have, this is pretty big, and she has not handled her before, and we have an amazing captain and the team on board. So today we will just make the first instruction, and then we take it from there.
Shirley, I think that sounds to me like a nervous possibility on that side of things. It's not a conviction, but I think it's a case of it's a possibility at least.
There's hope in there, definitely, isn't there? But I would say we're currently moored up on the River Tyne. It's very narrow. I worked out that we do have to do a 3-point turn to head off to Dundee. So I'm going to be watching the captain and his team on the bridge very closely.
Yeah, well, you know, a massive super yacht, a cruise line. I mean, it's the same. The principle's the same, surely, on that basis.
Exactly. Just, you know, don't hit anything and stay out of trouble. There we go.
I can sense Christian getting a little bit worried now. He's like, oh, no, please don't. You know, just Christian, where can people find out further details about obviously how they can actually sort of get on board the Ambassador Cruise Line and indeed take a vacation or indeed take a cruise for their own experience?
Well, the best obviously is to go to our website at www.ambassadorcruiseline.com, where we have all the amazing itineraries on offer. We just launched our 24-25 season as well, where people see that even more cruises from the regional ports are on offer. And I'm sure there everybody can take something for their bucket list between the 200-night cruises we offer and book with us there. And we look forward to see them on board.
And as Ambition has now been christened and blessed by Shirley Robertson, OBE and double Olympic champion, then obviously all is going to be good. It's going to be fantastic. Awesome connecting with both of you today. Good luck with the adventures and so on. Shirley Robertson, OBE, and of course, double Olympic champion, and Christian Verhoenig, from Chief Executive Officer from Ambassador Cruise Line. Huge thanks and happy sailing.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Time for more movie thoughts, reviews, and royal commentary from Richard Fitzwilliams and Natasha Wanton on the Midweek Drive.
Well, it may well be that having finished the world of exam stress, and of course, we were listening to our double Olympian there on her cruise journey around the British Isles, that maybe you have to wonder, is there anything more to life? Well, clearly Eurovision did provide that input. And I know that in Australia, it could well be that people are still recovering from the awesome showing of Australia as they continue to sort of seek the need to be part of this bonding of humanity, at least humanity as far as Europe, Israel and Australia is actually concerned, which is, you know, fundamentally the whole aspect of the whole thing. So congratulations to Laureen, or is it Laureen? I think it's Laureen, but either way, those nails were phenomenal. I did say I was worried about May Muller's nails. I felt that the fingernails could count against her because she wasn't as skilled in actually wielding them as the stone fingernails of Laureen. So clearly, she proved that she was quite clearly up to mustard. But let's find out what Natasha Wanton thought about this. Did you get up at the ludicrous time of 3 a.m. or 4 a.m. in the morning to watch the whole experience in Australia?
I feel a fraud, but I will confess that no, I did not get up at 3 a.m. to watch Eurovision. I got a very lovely highlights reel on my ABC News this morning, and that was adequate for me. I woke up and they were just live tweeting like, oh, the votes are coming in, and I'm like, do you know what? This is a good time to catch it. I can skim the rest.
Okay. Well, let's turn to somebody who I think was experiencing her very first Eurovision, as indeed a citizen of the United States, not used to this extravaganza of fun time, etc. We, of course, went through a number of sort of possibilities, including the shock of Ireland's entry not getting through the semi-finals. My own personal favourite, which was Austria's entry, of course. Who the hell is Edgar? Had a sort of mid-table position in the end. But Jessica Burtis, your thoughts on your first ever Eurovision?
So I have actually been avoiding any spoilers about it because I'm going to watch it tomorrow because I have an essay due today and it's my last essay. Wow. So I was not able to watch it yesterday. And I didn't want to have to be thinking about an essay as I watched Eurovision. I want all my focus on Eurovision. So I'm going to watch it tomorrow and then I am going to experience what it's like.
Well, this is the strange and indeed peculiar system. I've never, ever had anybody who's actually said some 24 hours after the contest has actually taken part that they want to avoid it because of spoilers. Oliver Stanley, avoiding spoilers. But any thoughts from your own perspective?
I watched it in the most inefficient way possible. I was on a video chat with my family and just kind of watching it over there, over the camera. So the video chat helpfully cut out all the music as background noise, so I didn't hear any of it. So I have to catch up with the songs, but I know who won, so I'm in the reverse.
Okay. Well, you know, suffice to say that I think, Jessica, prepare yourself for an emotionally exhausting experience. Whether Kathy Manso, who may have decided that no, preparing to travel to the Ukraine was more than sufficient in terms of the journey, as opposed to putting up with Eurovision as well. As I said, Kathy, I mean, I feel in one sense, my concern about the fingernails of May Muller was actually validated. But on the other hand, clearly the subsequent winner, obviously no spoilers because Jessica is actually delaying her viewing of Eurovision, could have demonstrated that actually it was all about the kind of handling of the fingers there. Gathy, did you watch Eurovision? And if so, have you got the same level of ranting as Natasha's going to share with us in a few moments?
Oh, well, probably. I won't take up Natasha's time, don't you worry. I think she'll get to the nitty gritty. I did watch most of it. I didn't stay for everything because sleep, but I did watch most of it. I do know who's the winner. I will not reveal it. I mean, look, who am I to judge when it comes to nails? I do mine. I get it. So it's to each their own. If it's your style, it's your style. I think I was most surprised at how far, without revealing anything, Sweden got, because I wouldn't have put them as far. But that's me personally. And I think there was just a lot of classic Eurovision moments. All right, that's all I'll say.
Yeah, I mean, there were lots of good things I felt about it. There were lots of things which I found bizarre. I mean, clearly, the whole notion of a certain princess of Wales effectively sort of playing a few keyboard notes, I think, was a shocker to many people. But still, she's got to do something in this sort of side of things. Natasha, any rants you'd like to make in the kind of spoiler-free zone, or maybe just highlighting for things that Jessica needs to watch out for and say, okay, this is a challenge?
I've not actually got that many rants about Eurovision, you'll be pleased to hear. It will just be my movie reviewing tonight that I'll be ranting. Eurovision is one of those things, Jessica, where if you haven't experienced it before as a veteran, you kind of get used to certain things being the norm, one of them being Graham Norton's amazing commentary. He is always bang on. You just kind of have to go with it. It will be very bizarre in places, but it's all just part and parcel of the whole thing. It just love it and embrace it. Yep, just suck it all up. Big breaths.
I'm very excited. I could hear flatmates, sorry, they were listening to it while I was working on my essay, and I could hear the music. I wanted to watch it so much. I was so curious. So I will take all of your advice into account.
Well, we'll talk about it at the next Midweek Drive Live. I mean, I think that's a key thing, because you'll have a chance to actually watch it there. You can share with us as we actually will be launching a few other key things to the fore. But strangely enough, there are other things that are slightly more important in the world than, of course, the awesomeness that is Eurovision, although it was considerably much more popular globally than a certain sort of feature that sort of focused on this particular individual was concerned, in which I have to say I'm very shocked that he was so rude. Well, actually, I'm not sure in terms of whether it's rudeness or whether it's actually a case of simply why didn't TVAM on an interview, which actually, Kathy Manso, you actually did it, draw my attention to this in terms of TikTok.
So
you
take
taking the flack on this one.
I want to give you my deepest apologies. I'm so sorry. But you showed up in my algorithm, my TikTok algorithm. You appeared.
So allowing for the fact that Richard showed up on Kathy Manso's TikTok algorithm obviously led me to investigate further, as one tends to do. And again, why they simply didn't do what we've had to do twice over the last 10 years with Richard Fitzwilliams and simply operate the mute button. That would have all they needed. Just mute, because sometimes he gets carried away and the mute things don't even give. But I know that, Richard, you're keen to sort of praise Dr. Scholler, who should really be the next duly elected monarch of the country that is Great Britain, because she would actually have much more glory and wonderment than the quote from Dr. Scholler, pale, stale, and predominantly male current incumbents of the House of Windsor, shall we say.
Alex, I have to say, I mean, that's a wonderful idea of yours. It really is. I just think it's the tinsiest bit unlikely. To be fair to Dr. Scholler, she describes herself as an activist, and everyone knows perfectly well that the reason she was chosen for the debate was precisely to get roughly what we got. And that reason, of course, that is totally proven, is that the Ed Balls and Susanna Reid, who was supposedly a poor...
Listen, Ed Balls nearly went into PTSD. And of course, Richard, why don't you simply use the phrase "hell to the frick no"? I mean, these are kind of classic lines, surely.
Well, apparently there were quite a lot online and various newspapers quoting all this. I mean, it really, the whole thing was, to be frank, I mean, it's what they wanted. But it's slightly frustrating if you're involved in that, because you couldn't get any serious points through. And
Richard, you know that you're among friends here. You've got your Midweek Drive Morning Edition family from Siren Radio supporting you on this basis. So, Kathy, let's turn to you, because as I say, it's your fault I even was aware of this in the first place, not being followed the whole thing. So share with us, please.
I'm so sorry. I cannot emphasize that.
It has to know.
Enough.
I mean, I subsequently found out that Richard's also shared a pint with Nigel Farage, which I would have said is supping with the devil, but that's a different line entirely.
What have you been doing, Kathy? I need to know.
Here I was, just in between 121 tasks that I usually do, and to pass by time, I go on TikTok, as you do. And of course, a lot of my TikTok is news, a lot of activism, a lot of political awareness, a lot of, oh, and also I live in England, so anything English is now in my algorithm. It doesn't matter. And I have Sky News, BBC, all of them. So it was inevitable, Richard, that you were going to appear. That's really, I should, it's more like, duh, of course you would. And
in point of fact, I mean, there is a very lively one, which is much more informative, between me and Graham Smith of Republic, also online. Now, that is actually quite interesting, because there are quite a few ideas coming out there between the noise.
Richard, I hope you're not calling out Dr. Schola as being in some way, shape or form, you know, not an objective, well-meaning, well-balanced individual who actually simply wants to address the whole ineptitude of the royal family. I mean, it's not as though we're dealing with the royal family of Sweden, who've been going for much longer.
I would argue that the clip is not completely fair either. Richard, I don't think you said more than two sentences in the, whole clip.
If you want the, haven't you seen the original, the 5 minute?
Now I have. I'm just saying that the TikTok alone, It only gets her talking most of the time. You barely got any word in. So
yes, I can see. Yes,
how it's edited isn't exactly in your favor either, which I can recognize.
I must have a look at this, because I don't do TikTok, and I think I probably should. I mean, it's exhausting.
Actually, Richard, you do TikTok. It's just you're not aware that you have been doing TikTok. This TikTok thing has pretty much gone viral, which is why Kathy has actually sort of pointed it out to me.
Well, if you need someone to help you with TikTok, Richard, I'm here for you. I'm not a far journey away.
Well, it's nice to know that. I have to say that I did know that there was a shortened version, which had just her and not me. But the real thing, I mean, what I didn't realize was that if you have two people shouting, but the way their microphones were placed is you could actually hear quite a lot of what was being shouted. But you really couldn't make any serious points beyond the first opening, and I didn't interrupt her until quite a way in, because if you start interrupting opening statements, I mean, where do you go? What
hell to the freak? No, Richard. Oliver, I mean, are you a TikToker? Is this something which you're quite shocked as a relative newbie to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition? I mean, is this something which you think, I don't know, you know, I'm going to have to check this out?
I think the Instagram algorithm is the one that decides which TikToks I see, since they're all like transferred across both sites. And I mostly get cats rather than political discussions, so I don't really have any.
to be fair, a cat would have actually probably had more poignant comments to make than either of the speakers, possibly including Richard at times. Sorry, Richard.
I'm not sure I agree, Alex, with that. Now, that is a comment that's outrageous. It's simply thrown out there.
Natasha, let's turn to your ranting system. I mean, is this something which you're not even aware of as yet, or is it a case of you'll soon be typing in Richard Fitzwilliams and monarchy into YouTube and saying, I've got to find out all of this now?
Well, I'll probably YouTube it. I'm not a TikToker. That won't surprise people who don't know me. I'm a bit of a social media virgin. I'm not really into that whole kind of side of things. I have Facebook. I use the Messenger. It's convenient to talk to people. That's about it. but no, I definitely want to look it up. The thing I find, which Kathy highlighted, which does frustrate me, is because unfortunately a large proportion of society get all their information off social media now, when you have the editing, it leads to a lot of problems and a lot of ignorance. And so I feel bad for Richard that he has been edited in a way that doesn't probably go in his favor. That's probably quite annoying. I would be annoyed if that was me.
Especially when he doesn't even realize it until it's revealed on a show like this. It's unbelievable.
Exactly. That must be incredibly frustrating. So I'm sorry that that's happened to you, Richard. But no, I will look into it and have a look, because obviously it's, I get the big ones. They do pop up occasionally and people show me things and it happens, but I just don't, generally, I'm not the first one to get to it.
Jessica, is this something which has shocked you in Dublin? I mean, more than actually having to sort of avoid spoilers for the Eurovision Song Contest. By the way, there is a pianist at the start who has some royal connection, I believe. You might like to sort of check out that. That's by the by. Anyway, any thoughts on Richard and how he's found himself unwittingly spiked by TikTok?
I hadn't seen this happen on TikTok. Most of my TikTok is like memes and like videos of like those hamsters on tiny mopeds. So I don't tend to see like this sort of content, but I'll definitely look it up. But I think the internet can be very unforgiving, and I think people like when things are edited that make it can make it more controversial or can make it more like people can buzz about it a bit more. People don't like just sensible takes, I feel like. But I think the internet's attention is also pretty fickle. I think that people move on very quickly from things that aren't a serious deal, so.
All we can say is thank the Lord Richard didn't actually harm any hamsters riding on tiny mopeds. Otherwise, I'm afraid it would be curtains in more ways than one. You'd almost say there was a conspiracy happening. See the way we segue there into the Cairo conspiracy, Richard, and give you a whole new movie to actually focus on for today.
Indeed, yes, Alex. No, it's been a very lively time, of course, and over the coronation period, a very large number of interviews. They're still continuing. There's some more today.
Enough already. Enough with the coronation. I mean, it's happened. It's over. Deal with it. We have to move on in the immortal
Move
words of
on
the
to
son of Pam Lydon, founder of UK-based PR agency Brightstar Digital. She told the Express, "I know there's historic reason to take these, but the PR part of me thought that's enough photographs for now. Enough of these things of royal
Well,
photographs, etc."
it doesn't seem, I don't think that most, I mean, one thing people can't get enough of, or the press certainly can't get enough of, is anything royal. But just to switch, as you have, to Cairo Conspiracy, director Tariq Saleh, who's Swedish, it won the Cannes Award for the best screenplay and also a jury prize. And it's an Arabic language political thriller. And it is, I have to say, well done, particularly visually, not always entirely convincing, but nonetheless showing, set in Egypt, the corruption of the regime, and indeed both the spiritual and the temporal, the duplicity of power and the way that it's mishandled. This is the theme of it. And we meet, to begin with, Adam, played by Tawfiq Barbon, who's a fisherman's son in the village of Manzala. Then the local imam, imagine how thrilled he is. The local imam tells him he has a bursary to study Islamic thought at the prestigious Al Azhar University. However, when the chief imam drops dead of a heart attack, there a ferocious battle develops between the government and the clerical establishment as to who succeeds him. Both sides are manipulating things, but of course, most particularly the government. And when Adam's student friend, well, he sees him murdered by masked assassins in the courtyard of the mosque. Spectacular visuals in this movie, by the way. Then he starts to get an idea as to why he got this bursary. He's contacted by Colonel Ibrahim, played by Fares Fares, who makes it clear that he must help the government to make sure that the chief imam's post gets to a government appointee. And, well, they'll help his father, and they'll also do other things if he doesn't cooperate. Church and state hopelessly corrupt because one of the imams decides that he'll admit to a murder he didn't commit simply to expose government corruption. So, in a not entirely convincing scene, Adam has to try and persuade him not to, and so on. It's about manipulation, it's about duplicity, it's about corruption, and also the tension is well developed. One of the problems in the movie, from time to time, there are actions in it which are not entirely convincing.
So really just look just like Eurovision, perhaps.
Perhaps, Alex, perhaps. But it's an unusual movie. There's some really stunning visuals in mosques and the like. And yes, I mean it. A character like Colonel Ibrahim is just waiting to get the chop himself because anything he does, just say there's a change in the policy or just a change in who's above him. Well, he'd expect to perhaps to disappear. I mean, this is it is a thoroughly cynical examination of both church and most particularly state. But it is well acted, and as far as is particularly good, as a rather disheveled police officer who hasn't really risen in the ranks, and nonetheless, as I say, is at the mercy of events. As for Adam, well, you wouldn't envy him spying on his fellow students what might happen if that were discovered. A movie that I thought was good. It's certainly been praised. I wouldn't rate it as a sort of 10 out of 10, but it's an unusual and movie with a message again that we've seen in a lot of movies, but it's well enough conveyed.
Jessica Burtis, one for you or one which you would actually pass?
I think it sounds interesting. I think that movies that have mysteries to them have grown on me quite a lot. And Egyptian Arabic is just so pretty. So I think it'd be nice to listen to a movie that would be spoken in it. So I think that this one actually sounds really great. I'd like to watch it.
Egypt, of course, not part of the Eurovision Song Contest, unlike Israel, but that's another time for another issue. Oliver, one for yourself, or are you not into conspiracies?
I love a good mystery. I feel like the background politics is something that I've not caught up on. I know next to nothing about half of the situations in the world, but I'd like to check it.
That's okay, Oliver. You're a student at the University of Lincoln. We understand that. We like to cocoon you until we actually eject you, projectile-like, into the value of the whole system.
University.
Kathy, what about yourself? Before you head off to Ukraine, is it a case of I'll just find out what those Egyptians are getting up to?
No, I do want to see it. Whether I have time to is a better question, but no, it's exactly up my alley. This is something that will keep me hooked. I'm pretty excited for the cinematography of it, but I will have to find time.
And Natasha, is this the movie that's given you copious pages of rant-filled notes, or is that another?
No, it is not this movie. My copious notes are reserved for Peter Pan and Wendy. This one sounds great. It actually sounds, it's well acted. Huzzah! A rarity. No, I'm all down for this one. I heard Duplicity of Power and I heard Conspiracy. And I'm like, ooh, juicy, spill the tea. No, I'm all over this.
This is good. So, Richard, obviously looking to Richard's youthful genes there, much as he would comment on the fact that the royals have good genes, which has seen them fully functional until well into their 90s. Of course, David Icke, who I don't think you've actually shared too much time with, would have said that's because they were descended from lizards in the first place, Richard, and nothing to do with kind of human nature in terms of the genetic background. But Richard, I will actually ask you, would you like to hear the rant-packed Natasha Wanton on Peter Pan and Wendy, or would you prefer to go down the line of another duo in which we have an unlikely pilgrimage of Harold Fry? It's your choice, Richard. Where do you want to go?
Well, we must have both of them. We must have Natasha's review and my review of the pilgrimage.
Okay, Natasha, go for yours first then.
Okay, buckle up, buddies, we're going for it. It's fair to say from the outset that I probably didn't like this movie. You probably got that vibe right from the beginning. I'm going to go into the nitty-gritty background of stuff so that
I'm being fair and giving it, everyone... It's got Jude Law in it.
We will get to Jude Law, don't you worry. So, directed by David Lowery. And they spent a good deal of money on this, probably on the CGI. There's a lot of CGI, but I digress. I am a big fan of Peter Pan. I really like the franchise. So I thought going into this, it would be pretty much a no-brainer. I've seen all of the installments over the years, be it Hugh Jackman's Hook or, you know, the various
Steven
different
Spielberg
ones, the old
Hook.
Ones from the 80s. Steven Spielberg's Hook, the 2003 version with Jeremy Sumpter's my favorite. But no, so I thought this was great. It's a great story. Let's just retell it. Oh my goodness, I was wrong. Plot. So we start in London, traditionally, as we always do. And I thought, okay, right, traditional plot. We're going to be okay. We start with Wendy Darling, who's spending her last night at home because her mum and dad are sending her off to boarding school the next day. She is not packed yet, and she's rather reluctant to go. She doesn't want to grow up.
cue the appearance of Peter Pan, who, you know, traditionally introduces himself, finds his shadow, sprinkles a bit of pixie dust, and hey, away we go, second star to the right and straight on till morning. I'm thinking, okay, great. Got a bit weird with some of the flying scenes to start with. It's quite a dark opening, I will say, as well. But we get to Neverland. It's pretty scenery. It's less tropical than it normally is. It was giving me Irish coast vibes. So maybe one for Jessica. It was that sort of vibe more to it. And you begin to meet the pirates, and you begin to meet Jude Law as Captain Hook. And then everything goes into a hot mess. there have been several controversies around this movie, so I'll address those first, and then I'll get to the full stage of the rant. A lot of people have had issue with the casting of Tinkerbell in this movie, played by Yara Shahidi. I thought that she was actually pretty okay in this movie. People have been, you know, the whole race issue, it's a hot topic at the minute. Look at the Little Mermaid, it's a whole bit of an issue. I thought she was actually fine as Tinkerbell. I didn't have much issue with that. My issue was more with how they cast Tinkerbell, well, not how they cast Tinkerbell, how they created the story for Tinkerbell. That she got sidelined quite a bit, and her sort of role in the story was not really as much. Her character didn't shine through as much as it might do. You know, it's not as expressive, not as much of the sort of the visceral passion you normally get from a typical Tinkerbell. But that wasn't so much my issue. The second controversy, which absolutely is a problem, was Jude Law's Captain Hook. My goodness, that is the worst role I've ever seen Jude Law play. It was hideous. His Hook was confused. It was lifeless. And it was so unsexy. I don't know how they managed to do that to Jude Law. He should sue them for the fact that they made him unsexy on screen. Like, it was terrible. I digress. I think a lot of people have tutored the diversity in this movie, which is wonderful. Like, there is a lot of diversity. You know, you've got lots of different people from lots of different backgrounds, languages. You've got, you're seeing a lot of areas and breadths of different spectrums and areas covered in this movie, which is lovely. The problem is all diversity in the world is meaningless if the script is garbage. So whilst I guess it was trying to hang its hat on that, if the dialogue makes you feel like you're passing a kidney stone, it doesn't matter how diverse and wonderful it is. It has several issues with that. As I say, the dialogue is an issue, but also the characterization in general were very insipid. They seem to think that in order, it's the typical Mary Sue complex. They seem to think that by having strong female characters, in order to make those strong female characters, you know, shine, they've got to have weak male roles. Hollywood, please stop doing this. We don't want to see it. It's not empowering for women. We don't want to see insipid male characters, you know, just to try and, you know, brighten up the female
ones.
Look at Meghan and Harry. Just write good female characters and then we won't complain. But it really is that sort of Mary Sue complex. The Peter Pan role in particular, Alexander Maloney was the worst Peter Pan I think I've seen. You just don't care about his character. Like, he could die in the first 5 minutes, and I would have thought that's probably better for the movie. I cared so little about his character, and I don't think that that's necessarily a testament to him as an actor. And I hope that he gets cast in a role that maybe gives him more sort of breadth and able to express himself more. But in this, the dialogue was so stilted and cheesy, and especially at the end, that it was just. Oh, it was bad. It was bad. I was like cringing on my duvet, like, no, make it stop. I think two issues. Have diversity, but have a good script. Don't weaken the men to make the women shine. I get the twist, and I get why it was trying to make the twist. You're trying to have a bit of an unconventional Wendy role, sort of breaking down some of those gender stereotypes. And I completely understand what it was trying to do. But it didn't do that very successfully. It ended up going down the Mary Sue line, where you have a character that is never wrong. And unfortunately, that's not a believable character. And it doesn't sell it to me. The music throughout was pretty okay. They seem to have gone down the sea shanty route heavily, which I guess TikTok, that's the one TikTok I do know. They're pretty big on TikTok, and I get that it's all, you know, Wellerman and all of that is kicked off. So that was quite nice to hear some of the sea shanties and the music and the timing of the music, where they decided to enter some of it, I thought was really good. but I'm kind of clutching at straws to find something that I actually liked about it.
Natasha, I must have made the correct decision when, for Oliver's final class with his fellow postgraduate students, I decided to not go down the line of Peter Pan and Wendy and had a screening of South Park post-COVID instead. Obviously much more sensitive and much more appropriate to the whole aspect. Jessica, are you shocked?
It probably had much better dialogue.
Jessica, are you shocked by Natasha's vitriolic review? I mean, obviously up to Fitzwilliam's level of vitriol in terms of passing a kidney stone would have been preferable to listening to some of the dialogue. Or is it a case of, well, I don't know.
No, it is, because I thought the trailer looked really good and I was looking forward to it. So it's so disappointing. I'll probably still watch it just to see everything you're talking about, but it is very sad.
Yeah, maybe a double header with respect to Eurovision Song Contest followed by Peter Pan and Wendy. Kathy Manso, from the home of obviously Disney in Florida, Orlando and more, etc. Is this something which you think, well, Ron DeSantis was right all along?
First of all, hold on, don't distract me. Natasha, this is the best review. The passion, the bravo, like, just let's just take a moment for the love and discipline she had for this. I'm not gonna watch it. I think Natasha took care of that for me. I don't need to be cringing in my sheets.
Oliver, will you be cringing in your sheets, or is it a case of perhaps not?
I very rarely watch Disney's live action outings, just because they seem to, I'd say, lose the magic, but they never seem to start with it.
Richard, you only watch Disney live action outings. So from your own viewpoint, having heard Natasha's overview there, is this something which you think, perhaps I should check that to kind of redress the balance of the fun times I actually had with somebody who should have been Tinkerbell, of course, that, of course, being Dr. Shola?
Well, I have to say I thoroughly enjoyed the animation in Natasha's review. It was great. And you've absolutely made me, I'm convinced, I will go nowhere near this movie. And to see Jude Law over, I couldn't bear it. No.
Well, there we are. And Natasha's very fulsome review has meant we're going to have to bump the pilgrimage of Harold Fry back till next time. It's okay, Natasha. There was always that gamble.
I'm sorry,
that we took.
Richard.
Oh, well, no, but it was well worth it just for the passion, the fun of all that abuse thrown at it. Yeah. And also breaking it down, I thought, most successfully. I can see what I've missed.
Yeah. The unlikely pilgrimage of Harold Fry will be considered, together with Penelope Wilton and, of course, Jim Broadbent, in approximately 7 days from now. So if you have a chance to see it, you can obviously decide beforehand in terms of that. But for the moment, to Richard Fitzwilliam's survivor, of course, of having half a pint or indeed a pint with Nigel Farage. I noticed, Richard, when you were actually supping with respect to that particular individual, responsible obviously for so much delightful Brexit shenanigans, that you didn't seem to have beer. What were you actually drinking in terms of that? Was it gin?
Wine.
Wine. I thought so, exactly.
No, who knows? I might even be on Piers Morgan in the coming weeks. I will keep you informed.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, well, obviously, you have our sympathy if you actually move from one Brexiteer to another former Arsenal supporter, or indeed current Arsenal supporter, but what the heck. To Jessica Burtis, to Kathy Manso, to Oliver Stanley and Natasha Wanton, huge thanks. As ever, keep watching those movies.
The end, it will come a day when we will find a way.